much of the new financial galaxy was barely regulated. For a year, Citigroup was able to flaunt a merger with Travelers that violated the Glass-Steagall Act, which was still on the law books. Enron, in turn, gutted potentially inhibiting regulation of its own futures trading through the good offices of Texas Senator Phil Graham and his wife, Wendy Graham, who chaired the Commodity Futures Regulatory Commission until she retired and joined the Enron Board of Directors. Greenspan, as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, declined to take action against an apparent speculative bubble in the stock market, while central banks elsewhere in the world, the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, the Bank for International Settlements, considered that pricking such bubbles might be in order. As we have seen, in 2002 to 2003, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, within the Treasury Department, used its regulatory authority over bank credit cards to block activist regulators at the state level. Cole Porter's 1934 hit, Anything Goes, could have returned to Broadway with new lyrics. One disenchanted investment banker summarized the jurisdictional anarchy that followed the 1999 passage of the Financial Services Modernization Act. Financial holding companies got a regulatory green light to own any kind of financial service company, as well as investments in companies that had little or nothing to do with finance. They became catch-all structures to mask risky investments in non-bank corporations. Another festering problem created by the Financial Services Modernization Act was so-called functional regulation. The Act claimed that each component of these new conglomerate institutions would be regulated by a different governmental regulatory body. This meant that different federal and state entities had oversight for different components of the same business, yet nobody had full oversight for the entire institution's activities as a whole. So, functional regulation could more appropriately be called dysfunctional regulation. Some of what we think of as the bubble of 1997 to 2000 was a side effect of massive, permissive deregulation, not just of finance, but of energy and telecommunications, both in 1996. These were two other industries where egregious misbehaviors, Enron and WorldCom, became poster children of speculative havoc. During the boom, the energy and telecom sectors each issued roughly $1 trillion worth of new debt, manna for the financial services industry. Despite the enormous stakes, federal deregulatory and financial statutes provided scarcely more of a framework for imposing social values and behavioral requirements on newly ascendant financial services than had existed in the regulatory vacuum of the late 19th century. Those, of course, were the years when railroad became a verb as well as a noun, as in to railroad a bill through a supine legislature. Parallels to the deficit in social consciousness on the part of the FIRE sector abound. The United States took decades in the late 19th century to regulate working conditions for children. Current-day critics saw as much need to deal with the conditions that enticed young Americans into taking on crippling debt. Sociologist Robert Manning later detailed how banking deregulation during the late 1990s facilitated an enormously successful mass marketing campaign that dramatically altered American attitudes toward consumer credit and debt, not least on the part of teenagers. "The key is here," he had said, "as the marketing of consumption goes younger and younger and younger. We're talking about people who have never had jobs and haven't had to establish a budget." Similarly, Boston economist Juliet Shore argued that advertising had drawn children into rampant and gullible materialism. Noting how consumer spending accounted for more than two-thirds of the $11 trillion national economy, the New York Times summarized that the machinery of American marketing, media, and finance all encourage the consumption habit. Many consumers are unable to resist the overpowering mantra, spend, spend, spend. True, overconsumption is not ideally addressed in a political arena, but considerations beyond finance pull it there today. For example, experts estimated that fraud, such as acceptance by lending institutions of inflated property valuations, was present in at least 20% of loans that wound up in foreclosure. Margot Saunders, an attorney at Washington's National Consumer Law Center, added a telling point. Credit is not just a benefit. It is also a dangerous instrument. Everything from cars to toasters that have some danger are regulated, but loans which can cause such devastation when provided in the wrong situation are not regulated. The need for a broader regulatory assessment of financial legislation seems to leap out.